Welcome to When They Popped. Let's rewind to a simpler time together and dive deep into the music, movement, and mania behind our favorite Y2K celebrities and trends. Hosted by Kelsey and Mary, it's time for another episode of When They Popped.
Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
Mary, are you recovered from 90s Con? Because it's only been a couple days since you just gave us the best recap of our lives.
Oh, I'm honored. I don't know about that, but
yeah, you know, I had kind of like post-90s kind of depression for a day or two, but I'm pulling out of it.
You have Nick Carter performances to look forward to. Then we have Cancun coming up. I feel like there's some good stuff to look forward to in the hopper, right?
Absolutely. That's the only way to look at it.
So I realized that with all the excitement of 90s Con that we never really fully debriefed on the in sync of it all. I just feel like all of our listeners have been so amazing sharing with us what their theories are, what we think is next for in sync, the VMAs reunion. I mean, this is what we love about social media so much. It's like our moon landing when a boy band reunites after 25 years. So what do we think about their little commercial that they just came out with Backstreet Boys and Boys to Men?
Well, I mean, anytime members of boy bands get together, that is like our Super Bowl, our Christmas, right?
Oh my God, I loved it. So the Children's Place just came out with an adorable holiday commercial featuring Lance and Joey from NSYNC, AJ from the Backstreet Boys, and Wanya Morris from Boys to Men. And it featured their kids. It was like a cute, like, daddy and me pajama party that they were doing for the holidays. And I'm with you. Anytime boy bands come together, it feels like it could, like, you know, really make world peace a thing.
Yeah, I feel like we were so much less divided back then, and it just brings us back to that time, doesn't it?
I love it. So speaking of looking back to that time, should we get into the topic of today's episode?
Yes, yes, yes.
So today's episode was inspired by a recent very long plane ride that I was on. Because I had literally seen all of the in-flight movies, and I saw that there was a documentary about Brittany Murphy. So obviously I watched it, and I fell right back down the rabbit hole that is her story. Brittany was in so many high-profile movies during Y2K. She was also a tabloid fixture in the early 2000s. And I feel like her story is just a mix of inspiring and tragic, but also really sadly mysterious. It's very sad, but also we want to celebrate, you know, her legacy and talk about the movies that she was in that we all ran to Blockbuster to go rent as soon as they came out. So we're going to talk through our favorite Brittany Murphy movies. And we're also going to discuss the unusual circumstances around her death and her husband's death just 5 months later. No, we're not a true crime podcast, but this was one of those stories that totally consumed us as early teens. So we're going to get into it and we're going to talk about it.
And we're going to do a two-parter. So buckle your seatbelts.
Buckle up, Buttercup. This is part one where we're going to talk about the fun stuff, aka all of our favorite Brittany Murphy movies. And as always, before we jump into our episode, quick disclaimer that we do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or performances in this episode. The purpose of these clips is for commentary and critique. So to kick us off, let's talk about Brittany's upbringing. So she was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and then she was raised by her mother in New Jersey. And growing up, Brittany and her mom seemed to have struggled financially, which later materialized as Brittany becoming really involved in philanthropic causes, including supporting those experiencing homelessness. So as she got older, it seems like Brittany really channeled this really challenging upbringing for a greater good. And we love that about her.
A philanthropic queen. I also read that she was originally born Brittany Ann Bertolotti, a nice Italian name there, but her dad was in the mafia, and that's why him and Brittany's mom ended up getting divorced. He also got another woman pregnant when Brittany was two, and they grew up having very little contact with her dad. However, foreshadowing, he'll end up playing an important role after her death and in our next episode.
More to come on that. But in the meantime, it seemed like all sources agreed in everything I read that Brittany was destined to be a star from the very beginning.
I read that she was like super precocious, like just at 5 years old, as legend has it, Brittany and her mom spotted Hollywood legends Burt Reynolds and George Segal at a restaurant. And, you know, when I was 5 years old, I was like hiding behind my dad. I was so shy growing up, but not Brittany. Brittany marched right up to their table, introduced herself to them, and told them that one day she was going to be a star too. Like, When you know, you know.
Truly. I read super similar accounts that she was super outgoing. She loved to dance and sing, and she got her start in like her school theater and then her local theater. And she eventually starred in the musical Really Rosie at just age 9. So triple threat. Here we go. Hmm. And after that performance, her mom said in an interview that Brittany told a local TV station, I'm going to get an agent and do commercials and work in New York. Then I'm going to move to Los Angeles, be in movies in Hollywood, and then come back and do Broadway. Then I'll probably have a huge musical career. I'm going to change the world. Oh my God. Who had goals at age 9? I love it.
Another one of these stars that we talk about that was just like crushing it at such a young age. And she was right on the money, because when Brittany was 13 years old, her and her mom, they made that decision to up and move to Hollywood. And that's when Brittany ultimately decided to take her mom's maiden name, Murphy. First of all, Bertolotti can be a mouthful. And she also wanted to kind of distance herself from her father and what he had going on.
Honestly, it kind of reminds me of Howie DeRose. Stage name, Donetti, yeah. Tony Donetti. It all comes back to Backstreet Boys in my brain. So Brittany lands her first breakthrough role. I mean, at least the role that we sort of all were introduced to Brittany Murphy was Ty Frazier in 1995, Clueless. Mm. You're a virgin who can't drive.
You're a virgin who can't drive.
I mean, that was a culture-setting role. So my sister loved this movie, and I remember seeing it before I was even old enough to know what a virgin was. Thank you, Hocus Pocus, by the way, for teaching me what that word meant. Like, what the fuck? I'm sure my mom was thrilled when I asked her if I was a virgin, if I could, like, light the black flame candle. Like, isn't that kind of messed up?
Yes.
I've heard it on Clueless first, and then Hocus Pocus really just stoked my curiosity more. So let's talk about Clueless for a bit. So this movie, which I did not know, is loosely based on Jane Austen's 1815 novel, Emma. But obviously takes up modern day setting of Beverly Hills. Brittany played Ty, who's this new awkward girl at school who is taken under the wing of Cher, played by Alicia Silverstone, to give Ty this makeover and make her more popular. And of course, there's some fun conflict in there when Ty falls for the guy that Cher likes and they get in this fight. And that's when we get the iconic, you're a virgin who can't drive. So did you know that this movie almost wasn't made because the original script, which, by the way, was originally titled No Worries, which I kind of love, it was written by this amazing woman, and these dumb film executives at Fox almost passed it up because they thought the story was, end quote, too female-oriented to appeal to a large enough audience. They thought that the script needed more boys in it. And they were afraid that if they focused on girls, they wouldn't get any guys to see it. What the hell? And there are some things that I'm really glad that we left in Y2K, and the casual misogyny is one of them. Like, tell women stories. What the heck? Can you? I can't imagine a world without Clueless. I mean, this was the Mean Girls before there was Mean Girls.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
So this movie launched so many careers, not just Britney's, but even a man. Hello, Fox, Paul Rudd. This was like one of his first movies. Alicia was already sort of like a bona fide star by this point, but I don't know. So many huge stars were considered for these roles that it's actually insane that they even thought about not potentially making it when we talk about some of the people who are considered to star in the movie. So let's get into that. For the role of Cher, the executives suggested Carrie Russell, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Angelina Jolie. And allegedly, the screenwriter met with Reese Witherspoon, who I feel like could have done a really good job in this.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I mean, Alicia Silverstone was just perfect. So for the role of Josh, which we know Paul Rudd ultimately landed, Ben Affleck and Zach Braff auditioned for that role, which is kind of funny if Zach Braff got it, because then his co-star on Scrubs was Dion's boyfriend. Kind of funny. So Sarah Michelle Gellar was offered the role of Amber, but she turned it down because she was starring in All My Children at the time. And Zooey Deschanel auditioned for the role of Amber also. Wow. I just cannot imagine anyone in that. Whatever. Then no. Seth Green auditioned for the role of Travis, which is kind of funny. And Terrence Howard and Dave Chappelle were considered for the role of Murray.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, obviously, we can't imagine any movie with any other cast because, like, duh. But praise be, we got who we got. And Alicia has since talked about the casting process, and she mentioned that after the chemistry read with Brittany Murphy, she was just elated because she knew that they had found their tie for the movie. She told this really cute story that she got to be in the room with the casting team because her role was solidified, and it was her first time getting to like stay in the room and like deliberate with everyone after. And after Brittany left the room, she was like, "You guys, did you just see that? Like, oh my God." And she was just really, I just thought that was like a really cute behind the scenes story. And sweet Brittany was only 17 when the movie was being filmed. So for once, we had an actual teenager in a movie about high school.
Wait, that never happens. Never.
Literally never. That is a unicorn.
I also read that during the filming of Clueless, Brittany's mom, Sharon, was diagnosed with breast cancer, which obviously and understandably put a shadow over this, you know, otherwise very incredible, exciting time for Brittany. She was getting her big break and she kind of wore herself very thin during this time because she dropped everything for her mom, but was also, you know, keeping up with her obligations in this movie. And Anne Hackering, the director of Clueless, has said that she noticed it was definitely tough on Brittany, but unsurprisingly, she handled it like a complete pro.
Yeah. Anne Hegering also wrote the screenplay, which is kind of cool. She was like the director and the writer of it, which is awesome. But yeah, I read the same thing that after Clueless, she took a hiatus from acting for a little bit just to be by her mom's side. And that she and her mom were incredibly close. By all the accounts I've read, they were best friends. It was like an unusually close relationship between a daughter and mother. So agreed. I mean, that must have been so difficult to reconcile, finally being on the verge of making it big and like, you know, having all these hardships growing up, struggling financially, and you're finally like on the precipice of making it big. And then, of course, this huge emotional setback happens and it puts things into perspective. So sort of also on a downer note, I couldn't find anything where Brittany said this in particular about her Clueless experience, but there was a recent interview with Melanie Lynskey. Do you watch Yellow Jackets, Mary?
Oh my God. Yellow Jackets, like, it gave me so many nightmares, but yes, I do.
Heart palps. Heart palps, but I love it. So Melanie Lynskey said that she was friends with Brittany and that it was really just devastating the way that Brittany viewed herself. She said that she felt that Brittany had to change herself to be a successful actor. I'm going to read a direct quote from Melanie's recent interview. She said she was perfect just as she was, but people were trying to cast her as like, quote, the fat one. Because when she was a very young teenager, her cheeks were a little bit round. People tell you that you're a particular thing and it's very hard to fight back against. So again, I don't have any record of Brittany saying that this happened to her on the Clueless set. But when you see, you know, she's a 17-year-old. We all had, you know, rounder cheeks when we're 17 years old. So I just feel like there's evidence that some of these issues that we'll see materialize later on in her career probably developed really early on, which is just kind of heartbreaking.
I heard about an interview she did where she said, like, an executive said to her that, or she heard through someone that they said she was cute but not fuckable, and that she needed to like make changes to be cast for those types of roles. And you know, if you hear something like that enough, it's hard not to believe it.
And it's like when you're 17 years old, like, oh my God, you're still a child.
When it's coming from some fat man, right?
I know. Who doesn't even want to make your movie anyway?
Yeah. Anyways, so moving on, Brittany also experienced another rite of passage during this time. She actually went to prom in 1995, right after the premiere of Clueless. Brittany brought teen heartthrob of the time, Jonathan Brandeis, as her date to prom. Like, okay, iconic. They were super cute together and actually were like a thing for a bit, but they didn't last very long, as many relationships at that age don't. But they did stay very friendly and close over the years. And Jonathan himself ended up dying young. He allegedly committed suicide in 2003.
That is really sad.
You know, when you have two people like that die so young, you know, it's just hard to reconcile. But one of Brittany's most enduring roles is one that like many may not necessarily associate with her. And this began in 1997, and it's the role of Lou Ann Platter on TV's King of the Hill. So this was just 2 years after Clueless came out. And she provided the voice for the character for over 250 episodes. This show ran for a decade, and I just had no idea that she was a part of this show.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah. Like, I knew about Mila and Family Guy, but I did not know Brittany had any involvement with King of the Hill.
Oh, Britney's just, I never liked King of the Hill. Like, I just didn't like the style of it. So I never watched it, but it was always on like late at night. Like, if you couldn't sleep or whatever, or like you had friends over and there was like a late sleepover. I don't know. It would always like be on in the background. But I feel like Britney had this amazing, just like raspy voice naturally. And I just feel like I could recognize that little rasp anywhere.
Oh, yes. And speaking of the rasp, I know we talked about her early years doing plays and musicals, but did you know that Britney pursued music also in her adult years?
No.
Well, on top of that, she had an incredible ear. It was purported that she could learn how to play an instrument in just 20 minutes of practice. Like, okay. And so she was very proficient at the piano and trumpet at a young age. And
trumpet.
I know, like, just can't picture her.
Wait, yeah. Did you play an instrument in elementary school?
I played too.
Did you play the clarinet? I feel like you're a clarinet girl.
How did you know? Have you seen pictures or something?
No! Shut up. You're a woodwind? That's hilarious.
Well, I was better at the violin.
I was going to say, did you also play the violin? I could see you. Wait, how did you play two instruments? That's so many instruments.
I don't know. They just made
Can you guess what I played? I think I've told you before because it's like a funny thing.
Wait, at the flute.
No, my sister played the flute, though. And she was really okay. Good. I played the French horn.
Oh, I did know that. I did know that.
Bah, bah, bah. We should start a band. Honestly.
I know, I was gonna say, if we get your sister, we can.
Am I original? Bah,
bah. Oh my god! And then we'd have Britney on the trumpet. We could really be like a parade.
Trumpet. She. Wow, that's like really impressive.
But she knew how to play instruments. She could pick it up like that. And you mentioned her raspy voice, and Britney's commented on that when it comes to singing, and she said, quote, my singing voice isn't like my speaking voice. I've always just kept it a secret and never taken credit because I wanted to learn how to work behind the microphone in recording studio. And some singers don't even know it was me recording on their albums, end quote. So like, is Brittany Murphy on like Spice World or maybe like, Oops, I Did It Again, background vocals? Like she says she's on albums and we don't even know.
Like, do you think she has like a pseudonym or something that she went by? Like Taylor Swift, Gnarls, Liebert, whatever it was on. Baby, listen what you came
for. Yes, I don't know, but she put it out there. So I'm like, if you know, let us know. And she was also in a band called Blessed Soul with another actor, Eric Balfour, in the early 90s. Like, I want footage of this. Like, is there footage of Britney in like a garage band? I have so many more questions now.
I'm literally Googling it to see if there are any clips. Oh my god, I see a clip. There's a clip.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, we're going to find a clip and we're going to post it on our Instagram. So make sure you're following us at When They Popped Pod. Okay, our social media blog. And now we're going to talk about her next big movie that we all know, Girl Interrupted, which came out in 1999. I feel like this movie must have been a huge step for Britney to go from being known for Clueless and King of the Hill to such a dark, tumultuous, emotional role. This movie gave me straight up nightmares as a kid. And if you haven't seen it, it's about a woman played by Winona Ryder who spends a year and a half institutionalized at a psychiatric hospital following a suicide attempt. And this was a huge critical success to be a part of. Angelina Jolie won an Academy Award, a Golden Globe, and a SAG Award for her role in this movie. Britney's character was really especially tragic, and she was a big part of the plot, but also like a very devastating part of it as well. Don't watch this movie if you're in like a bad mood. I don't know. I think also looking back, there have been a lot of critical articles about how the film tackles mental health and like the stigma around it and some of the stereotypes around it. But it was just the talk of the town. You like couldn't go anywhere without someone being like, have you seen Girl Interrupted? Like, did you ever see it, Mary?
I have a memory of a goldfish like Howie Duroux, but is that the one where she's like, I'll never tell.
Oh, no, that's coming up. Oh, my God. That's coming up.
I don't remember. I probably saw it. I just don't remember it.
Well, and it was scary, and it wasn't age appropriate when it came out in 1999. So, like, I think honestly, the only way that I saw it was because my sister was watching it one day, and I like walked in the room, and there's this one scene where Brittany Murphy's character keeps a rotisserie chicken carcass underneath her bed. And I just remember asking my sister, like, why is she doing that? Like, her character had an eating disorder. And it was just, like, very dark and hard for me to understand as a child. But still, like, looking back, what an awesome cast. I mean, Winona Ryder, Angelina Jolie, the critical acclaim. That must have been a really exciting project for Brittany to be a part of and have such a prevalent role in. So this success continued into the early 2000s. She was in Drop Dead Gorgeous, which honestly has the most iconic cast of all time. Kirstie Alley, Kirsten Dunst, Allison Janney, Denise Richards. Like, oh my God, this movie is also Amy Adams' first movie ever. Like, go Brittany. I feel like this just goes to show that she is popping, that she's being entrusted acting along the brilliant actors of the time. So then came 2001's psychological thriller, Don't Say a Word. Brittany played, again, a severely traumatized girl who witnessed this crime and was the key to Michael Douglas's lead character, to him getting his abducted daughter back from these thieves. If it sounds crazy, it's because it was kind of like a cliche action flick. But I remember being too young to see it in theaters. But the trailers had Brittany saying this iconic line, "I'll never tell."
I'll never tell any of you.
And we would all run around the playground at recess saying that all creepy to each other, like, oh my God. And clearly with you too, Mary, because it was so creepy. So, interesting fact that I found just doing my research. So this movie came out just 3 weeks after 9/11 in 2001. And I was just curious. I wondered how that may have impacted the film's success. It doesn't seem like it really impacted like the box office or anything, but allegedly the filmmakers did think about delaying the movie, but they ultimately kept it on track. They came out with it on schedule, but they did cut out and replace shots of the World Trade Center from the edit, which is really interesting. The opening of the movie originally had the Twin Towers in it, but instead they edited it out to just be, you know, a view of Brooklyn, which is just it's an interesting slice of life from 2001. So that same year in 2001, it was a big year for Brittany. She was in this movie called Riding in Cars with Boys alongside Barrymore. This was another movie that I desperately wanted to see. But now that I know it's about a teenage pregnancy and drug addiction, I realize why my parents said, nah, girl, you can see Shrek instead.
But hey, Shrek's a good second place.
I was like, Dad, why can't I go see a movie called Riding in Cars with Boys that's rated R? And he was like, you're 8. Like, shut up.
Literally, probably my dream at the time was to like ride in a car with a boy. So
That's what I'm saying. Mary. Like, I wanted to ride in a car with a boy, like a Backstreet Boy, so badly. Yes.
I still do. So it's fine.
Still do. Wait, that's so funny that you say that, because like that's literally all I wanted as that's a boy just, crazy little kid.
Well, Brittany was like popping off during this time. You said it was a busy year for her, and it continued into 2002. That's where we get the infamous, critically acclaimed 8 Mile. And obviously, this stars Eminem in his film debut, along another star-studded cast, Mekhi Phifer, Brittany herself, Michael Shannon, Taryn Manning, and Kim Basinger. As we all know, 8 Mile contains autobiographical elements from Eminem's life and follows his character, this white rapper, Jimmy Smith Jr., aka B-Rabbit, and this attempt he makes to launch a career in hip-hop in Detroit. The title is derived from 8 Mile Road, the highway between the predominantly black city of Detroit and the largely white suburban communities to the north that Eminem grew up in. This movie debuted at number one and was a huge, huge, huge commercial success. It made $242 million on its $41 million budget. It received nothing but praise from the critics. The soundtrack, obviously, was also hugely successful, being certified 4 times platinum. But like on that note, I have literally have no idea what is on the soundtrack besides Lose Yourself. Lose yourself in the music. The moment you own it, you better never let it go.
That's like all that mattered. That song was just everywhere. What a huge get for Britney to be in this movie.
No kidding. And like, on that note, it got numerous award nominations and wins, including an Academy Award for Best Original Song for Lose Yourself, obviously. And 8 Mile has been named and ranked one of the best titles of 2002 by several publications, which I feel like tracks. And what I learned reading about this movie, like, this was a method movie all the way. They literally shot on location in Detroit. They could have shot it apparently in Canada for way less money, and it just did not ring as authentic. And that was just like the goal of this movie. They didn't want it to come across like forced or, you know, cheesy. And I definitely think they achieved that. It's just such a huge pop culture moment, just kind of like Clueless, I would say. 8 Mile is its own like pop culture moment for sure. And Britney, our girl, received a ton of praise and acclaim for her acting in this role. And something I have come to notice with our girl, she definitely seems to have an affinity for her castmates or people she works with on movies. And there's no shame in that. When you're around people that much, it makes sense. It's probably difficult to maintain a separate, like, personal life when you're on set all the time, because we all know how crazy film schedules can be. So on that note, Britney obviously played Eminem's love interest in this movie, and there was a lot of speculation that swirled both now and then if Britney and Eminem were an IRL couple. In 2002, Britney had an appearance on Letterman, and Dave asked her if there was a romance between the two, and she kind of did her laugh and sounded a little flustered in her response. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. And Dave goes, well, how did that go? And she was like, well, it went. And she kind of laughed. And then she said, it came and it went.
I'm talking about off the silver screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, sure.
Really?
yeah, sure.
Well, and okay. How did that go?
Well, it went. It came and went.
Came and went.
Yeah, you know, Eminem and Britney always spoke very highly of one another publicly, but they never officially confirmed, you know, more than that comment on Letterman one way or another if their relationship continued off screen. And relationship might be a bit of a stretch. It might have been more kind of a hookup, you know, who knows? Mm-hmm. But
maybe it's like a friends with benefits while you're on location in Detroit. What happens in Detroit stays in Detroit.
And it clearly has.
And then ends up on Letterman, LOL.
Okay, so in 2009, so this is after Britney's death, Eminem did an interview with Vibe, and he said on her death that it's crazy because at one point we were very close and she was a really good person. It's crazy when you see things, not just with her, but just all these things that are happening in Hollywood with people in music and with people in acting. So it's a nice quote, but it kind of doesn't really make sense. So I guess that's as like mushy as we're going to get with Eminem, right? Like, I don't know.
Right. And I wonder what he's referring to when he says it's crazy what is happening to people in Hollywood. Like, the sad, tragic stories of like succumbing to the fame, maybe. It sounds like he's hinting at something really ominous and nefarious happening.
Yeah, I would agree. It's probably something along those lines with what happens to a lot of young famous people. Uncle NT, he does an incredible 3-part deep dive on Brittany Murphy that I revisited when preparing for this. He says, it is a known fact in Hollywood. They definitely dated. That's a term, as I said, used very loosely. Dated is probably the wrong word. And then he said that Eminem was a huge D-bag. And honestly, that doesn't totally shock me if that's true. At the same time, Eminem had also been romantically linked to his other co-star, Kim Basinger, who played his mother in the movie. So it just seems a little bit messy. Yes.
Oh my God. Gross, Marshall. Not that Kim Basinger is gross. That's not what I'm trying to say. Just like being a D-bag is gross and not treating our girl Britney with respect is gross.
And I'm going to be honest, besides like Jonathan Brandeis, that is like a common theme we see with the men that Britney end up with. So let us continue on our journey.
to the next D-bag.
To the next one. In 2003, we got a movie that I certainly loved and adored, while maybe the critics didn't, but who cares? So this is the movie just married. And just a little reminder, if you forgot the plot, because I certainly did, even though I loved it, Tom, aka Ashton, and Sarah, aka Brittany, they're two lovebirds. They come from two totally different worlds. She's like a princess, not like a real princess, but you know, she comes from a lot of money, and he's kind of like a Joe Blow, like nobody, just kind of average. And they both have disapproval from their family and friends, but they still end up getting married and have a hell of a disastrous honeymoon. It was this movie that I literally fell in love with Brittany Murphy's laugh. It's just like so contagious and infectious and adorable. I just loved hearing her laugh in this movie. And the film's a rom-com, so obviously, as I said, the critics hated it, but the public disagreed, and it was considered to be a huge commercial success. It pulled in $101 million on an $18 million budget. Literally, whatever the critics say, I do the opposite, so screw them.
Yeah. I remember seeing this movie in theaters, so happy to contribute to hating on the critics. Mm-hmm. And I probably got it at Blockbuster after, because I had a major crush on Ashton Kutcher at the time. Mm-hmm. And I loved them together. I was so happy when I heard that they were dating in real life. And I was like, oh my God, what if they actually get married? Because they met on a movie about getting married.
Oh, I know. I loved the movie. I definitely wore it out from Blockbuster, like rewound it, started it over, that type of thing. I just thought her and Ashton had such great chemistry in this. And like you said, Kelsey, it may have seemed so good because they were falling for each other in real life. A lot of the comments I read about, like in the tabloids at that time, was like, are they even acting in this movie? Because it just seemed so genuine. So when being questioned about their relationship, Brittany told MTV News of Ashton that he's one of the kindest humans I've ever met. And Ashton told People that he and Brittany were really just friends while filming the movie and didn't strike up a relationship until production wrapped. Sure. He added in an interview while promoting the film that sometimes I think I'm dreaming when I get to spend time with her because she's so incredible and so amazing that you can't believe she's real. Okay, that's kind of adorable.
Oh, it's adorable, but we hate Ashton after
I know everything
that's happened the last couple of weeks. But yeah, that is a cute thing to say.
I'm living in 2003 right now, Kelsey. It hasn't happened yet. But so the director of the movie, Sean Levy, has commented on their relationship as well, saying from the minute they met, they were together, they laughed all the time, they made jokes, they looked happy. And it was later revealed that or speculated that they had actually gotten engaged because they were both wearing suspicious rings on suspicious fingers, but it was never officially confirmed.
I definitely thought they were engaged. Perez Hilton was all over that.
Oh, yes, he was. But mind you, and this is what's crazy is like back then I would have told you they were together for like 5 years or something. It just seemed like so long, but like they dated for 7 months. And that's it. And they broke up. And the rumor mill was saying that Ashton was kind of looking to return to that bachelor lifestyle he had grown accustomed to. And they also speculated that Brittany's mom, Sharon, had become too involved in the relationship. Kind of what Kelsey mentioned earlier. Like they had a very, very unusually close relationship. I think Sharon lived with her almost her entirety of her life. And it just was too much for Ashton to take. And so while this relationship lasted less than a year, their connection, I guess, proved to be an everlasting one. As Ashton was interviewed after Brittany's death, and he commented that he just celebrates who Brittany was. She was the person who walked in the room. She was always the first person to dance. I just try to connect to that and celebrate who she was and how she was, and not make sense of it, because there is no making sense of it. So a little more eloquent than Eminem's, and
I read a book.
Yes, and I think, you know, that rings true. She seems like kind of the life of the party, the one that's always laughing. Mm-hmm. So they broke up in 2003, might have trickled into 2004, but also in 2003, Brittany faced another setback. Sharon's breast cancer returned, and she needed serious surgery in order to survive. And being the person that she is, Brittany put her career completely on hold, dropped everything to care for her mother, who as Kelsey again mentioned earlier, she often called her best friend and soulmate.
Yeah, I heard that they would call each other soulmates frequently. And I mean, that's the second time that Brittany's now dropped everything to be there for her mom. It's really admirable. That was the only person that she had growing up.
I know. And it's interesting looking back now, just with after everything that's happened. But we're still in 2003. Also in 2003, Brittany purchased a fully furnished home in the Hollywood Hills from another Brittany, the Britney Spears.
It's Britney, bitch.
This is the one that Britney actually shared with Justin Timberlake. But both Brits reported that they thought there was something very strange about this house. And legend has it that Britney Spears apparently claimed to have some otherworldly encounter. Her makeup artist told a story on a podcast about how they had some, like, seance person come to the house, and they think that this person opened like a portal or did something, because basically Brittany told her makeup artist, who later told it on the podcast, that something tried to push her down the stairs, but it wasn't a person type thing. It was an otherworldly encounter, and she left the property after that incident and never returned. Brittany Murphy, as the years wore on, also grew to dislike the house. Something about it, the energy, she just did not seem to vibe with it. Later on, we learned from Simon, and you know, we take everything from Simon's mouth with a grain of salt.
Simon, her husband.
Yes, excuse me. Simon Monjak, her future husband. Every time that they'd be on their way home from a job or Hollywood function, allegedly Brittany would be like, why don't we go and stay at like a hotel, or go stay at the Beverly Hills Hotel? Like, she did not want to go back to that house. And like, Simon would be like, we have a 10,000 square foot home. Like, why are we going to go stay at a hotel? You know, he just couldn't make sense of it. But she definitely got the creepies from the house. And that obviously is the house where she died.
Oh, it's so creepy. And it's really sad, as you said, like, knowing what we know now, that she would die in that house under what seemed to be very mysterious circumstances. And so would her husband just months later. I believe in that stuff. Like, I don't fuck with seances.
Oh, yeah. I remember I did a Ouija board in high school, and it like was the scariest. It was so scary.
Oh, my God. What did it tell you?
I like don't remember, but I just remember, like, we got really upset and we were like screaming. But I think someone else was like moving it with their hands. So I don't know.
There's like all these like goosebumps. Remember Goosebumps?
Oh, yeah.
Are you afraid of the dark? Oh, my God. Are you afraid of the dark episode about a Ouija board? And like, remember So Weird?
I don't know that one.
Oh, my God. So Weird. There was like this girl who was like obsessed with the supernatural. Ooh. And she would like go and like solve these supernatural like mysteries. There was one about a Ouija board. Oh, my God. That shit. I do not mess with it.
You couldn't pay me to now. I was a dumb kid. But I truly was. Oh, God. Oh. Hindsight is 2020. But let's pivot to something a little more light, shall we? How about we have another 2003 event, another movie, and this one's a lot lighter. We have Uptown Girls. Quick refresher, Molly Gunn, aka Brittany, has never worked a day in her life and has lived like a queen since her father, who's a famous rock star, died and left her his fortune. But everything changes when Molly realizes that her manager has stolen all her money. So she goes and lands a job as a nanny for Ray, aka sweet little Dakota Fanning, who was 11 years old when this movie came out. And she's very serious and a complete opposite of Molly's like carefree, free spirit self. And Molly tries to bond with little Ray and learn how to be an adult, like what we're all trying to do now still, right? This movie came out in August of 2003. It grossed $44 million on a $20 million budget, which actually isn't that great. Oh.
Honestly, fuck the critics.
Yeah. Critics once again roasted this movie, in my opinion, unfairly when it first came out. However, some people have noted that the film has received more positive response in the years after its release and has been described now as a 2000s cult classic. Sometimes we take a little longer to get there, like better late than never.
You're so right. And I remember like not being that jazzed to see it when it came out for some reason, but then I went to go see it anyways. And I thought it was so sweet. Yeah. I became like obsessed with this movie. I feel like, or I remember feeling like back then, that this movie was who I thought Brittany Murphy was in real life. Like, carefree, but caring for others at the same time. Sensitive and sweet, but also a lot of fun. I was like obsessed with her outfits in the movie too. She wears these heart-shaped sunglasses and this denim overall dress with all these patches on it when she picks up Ray from school for the first time. Oh my God, it's so hilarious. And then we get that moment where like her heel breaks and she falls over. Like, it's some of those like slapstick moments, but overall, there were some like really good burns that I thought were funny. Like, Dakota delivers some of the most cold insults. Like, when she meets Dakota for the first time, Brittany's character is in this like club bathroom at her birthday party. And this voice from a stall says, "I had shoes like yours once when I was 5.
I had shoes like yours once when I was 5.
And then out comes little Dakota Fanning from a stall. There's this other scene when Brittany's character is drinking fruit punch from like a little hot dog stand. And Dakota's character goes, "Fruit punch, why don't you just drink cyanide?"
"Fruit punch, why don't you just drink cyanide? This is quick."
Like, she it's had, quicker. Like,
yeah, she had a great dry humor, like delivery in this film. It was so cute.
There wasn't even like a little bit of a glimmer of a laugh in her eye. Like, she was so good. She still has her baby teeth in this movie. Like, that's how young she was. She's so cute, but also like devastating at the same time. She was a savage, but I thought Brittany was just so charismatic and she totally won me over. I just loved her.
I mean, she's very likable. Like, her presence, it's hard not to. In a sweet interview after Brittany's death, Dakota, who was 15 by then, stated that she really cherished the time that they spent together while working on the film and said that she was very grateful that she had the chance to work with Brittany. And, you know, I thought that was very sweet. But let's pivot and talk a little bit more about Miss Murphy's love life. So her and Ashton broke it off in 2003. And then Brittany got engaged quite quickly after that to talent manager Jeff. And I'm going to butcher this. Jeff Quatinets. And I really botched it in the beginning.
And I like quantum tits.
I went in with too much confidence. I went in hot. So they got engaged in January 2004. And just a little background on Jeff. He created this company called The Firm. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but I definitely have. And they managed like superstars back in the day, aka like the Backstreet Boys, J-Lo, Snoop Dogg, etc. So he was kind of a big deal in Hollywood, I would say. But I mean, he proposed and their relationship only lasted 4 months. So they were like dating and engaged in a period of 4 months. So it did not go very well. But our girl does not take her time. She was subsequently again engaged to Joe Macaluso in December of 2005. So about a year later. And Joe was a production assistant she met while working on the film Little Black Book, another one in her repertoire with Jude Law. A little funny background on this. Obviously, Brittany had gone from back-to-back relationships from with Ashton and then Jeff. And so this time she was like, "I'm definitely going to take it slow." So prior to their engagement, and yes, her and Joe did get engaged, she went on 17 dates with him before she let him kiss her.
17?
I know. I feel like it probably was like over a period of 2 weeks, you know, like,
all right.
It was a quick 17 dates, but that is what the rumor is. But by April of 2006, they had broken up. However, on a positive professional note, also in 2006, Brittany was purportedly ecstatic to land the role of the voice Gloria in Happy Feet. She even said that this little joyful penguin was the character she most related to of the many characters she portrayed over the years, which is so cute.
That's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
I know. And Happy Feet ended up being the highest grossing film of her career. Of her career. What the hell was that? Okay. We know these animated movies really can bring in the bucks, and it made $385 million on a $100 million budget.
Oh my God. I think I saw it like 3 times. I was obsessed with it and I cried and cried every time.
was her voice like her voice or was it not?
Yes. It was like so instantly recognizable. The rasp, it's undeniable. But it was this is the cutest movie ever.
We cannot forget her love of music. And this is when she started dabbling in music again. And with Happy Feet, she had the opportunity to cover Queen's Somebody to Love. Somebody. And Earth, Wind, and Fire's Boogie Wonderland. She must have been musically inspired because also in June of 2006, Brittany and Paul Oakenfold released the single Faster Kill Pussycat together. Side note, I've never heard this song. I did love Paul Oakenfold's Starry Eyes Surprise. Did you know that song? Oh, wow. Starry Eyes Surprise. Sundown to sunrise. Dance all
night. Oh my, Starry Eyes Surprise, sundown to sunrise, dance all night. Oh my God, I love that music video.
It was a bop, so we're going to check out Faster Kill Pussycat. Apparently, the song became a club hit. It hit number one on Billboard's Hot Dance Club Party chart and number seven in the United Kingdom. So our girl can dabble.
She's reaching her goals from when her local TV interview.
Yes. Oh, full really circle. Cute. Well, this is when it's going to start to get less cute and more dark. So buckle up. Also in 2006, just after her relationship ended with Joe, she met Simon Monjak, a British quote unquote screenwriter and con man. Let's be real. Simon had already been nicknamed Conjack over his claims that he had written the 2006 Sienna Miller film Factory Girl. The director of the film, George Hickenlooper, disputed the claim, saying Simon Monjak had nothing to do with Factory Girl. So right off the bat, there are these like huge red flags being waved, like, hello, run for the hills. But we all know how this story goes.
I loved that movie, by the way. It would have been cool if he was a part of it because it was a good movie. What a weird thing to lie about.
That's like something you can get caught about. Like,
right. Like we could Google it, yes, Simon.
You idiot. Whatever. So how did these two get connected? Brittany had read Simon's script for another upcoming film and contacted him to pass on her compliments. So like, was that like her sliding into his DMs almost? Interesting. And Simon was freshly divorced from his first wife and took an interest in her because, it's Brittany Murphy. They went on a date and within a week they were spending every night together. Our girl does not take it slow. Okay. So as I alluded to earlier, Simon obviously had a bit of a past. Before he met Brittany, he had a warrant out for credit card fraud and had been evicted from four different homes. He owed his ex-wife months worth of rent. You know, he's just like got a lot of baggage and not like the kind that you guys can kind of sit and talk about on the couch and get through. You know, it's like criminal baggage.
Criminal baggage.
I'm getting criminal vibes, but they were together and Brittany, to me, again, this is just based on our parasocial relationship, but she seems like a girl that like when she's in, she's all in. So she really started going to bat for him because people would badmouth him in the business and she would defend him. He was being sued and she paid someone off that was suing him to the tune of about $10,000. Like she was just all in on this man. And for the life of me, I cannot see what she saw in him. But in their first few months, stories are that they were just inseparable. But one little problem arose quite quickly. And that was that Simon was not supposed to be in the United States. He was British. He needed to go back across the pond. And actually in 2007, authorities detained him after finding out he was still in the U.S. on his expired visa.
So Mary, I read that from the moment that they met and like fell in love, they were never apart for a day until he got detained. And that was the longest time that they ever spent apart from each other. I have read that a lot of sources credit her fierce defensiveness of him. Yeah. And some have even claimed that maybe she was being like brainwashed by him because he was always there. He never gave her any opportunity to be away from him. And we'll touch on some of those theories, you know, later on. Yeah. But just from the very beginning, he was like Velcro to her.
And why wouldn't you? It's Brittany Murphy. Color me shocked. A con man wants to Velcro himself to a gorgeous, successful Hollywood starlet.
Just great pay all your debts. Right.
Exactly. And so Simon's on the verge of being deported. And let me ask you, how do you solve a little problem like that? Well, in May 2007, Brittany and Simon announced that they were married in a private Jewish ceremony in Los Angeles. And this wedding came after a failed intervention by her friends that showed her evidence of his criminal history, and she didn't want to see it. And it is alleged that, like, after the wedding, even more so than Kelsey just explained, Simon really began isolating her even more from her friends by disconnecting her phones, cutting off access to her that did not go through him, taking over her email accounts, and firing and taking on the roles of her manager, agent, and even makeup artist. Like, what? Mind you, this is all while he has his own two secret sons running around that Brittany knew nothing about. Like, I can't take that.
So I read also that Simon was very close to his mother, but he never let her spend any time with Brittany because he allegedly was terrified of his mom debunking and, you know, clarifying all the lies and exaggerations that Simon had undoubtedly told Brittany, you know, exaggerating on his career, his upbringing, everything that there was to fabricate. It seems like Simon did just that, allegedly, from what I've read. And so even though he talked to his mom every day, apparently she only met Brittany one time.
That's crazy. And he was with Brittany every single day, and he talked to his mom every single day. But how suspicious that he did not let those paths cross.
Exactly. So I think that just goes to show the lengths that he was going to control the situation.
And control he did. And so they got married in 2007, 2 years of pure marital bliss, I'm sure. I'm saying that and I'm rolling my eyes. And in 2009, Brittany got some bad news that was allegedly very devastating for her, and she had not gotten asked back to be in Happy Feet 2. We all know how happy Happy Feet 1 made her, and it was really tough for her not to get the call for that. And while the official statement was it was a mutual decision, of course, the rumblings were there was that the studio had concern with her image. She was super, super tiny at this time. You know, she came in at about 100 pounds or so. And there were these, you know, vicious and vile rumors and speculation in the tabloid that it was either an eating disorder or there was drug abuse going on. And that was kind of what her storyline was in the media this time, you know. How thin she was. Oh, she's doing drugs again. She's not eating again. Like, that was what was being circulated over and over again in the tabloids. But in late 2009, Brittany got another opportunity. And as I said, because of this kind of image that she had and negative press that was being spread about her, these opportunities were becoming very few and far between. And so she flew to Puerto Rico with her Velcro husband, Simon, and her mother, Sharon, by her side, to work on a film called The Caller. And this would be actually the last movie that she would ever work on. Once in Puerto Rico, things quickly took a dark turn on day one of filming. So I don't even know how much footage they actually got of Brittany for this movie, but producers wanted to ban Simon from the set right off the bat. And everyone involved has told slightly different stories of what happened next, but one thing is for sure, Brittany never made it past the first day. She either quit or was fired. While once again, an official announcement called it a mutual decision. The most prevalent rumor is that it was a firing after Simon showed up on the set hammered and blustering and wouldn't leave, wouldn't stop yelling. So that was that. But Brittany and her family decided to stay in Puerto Rico for the week and try to enjoy the vacation, the time away from LA. However, on this trip, both Sharon and Simon came down with pretty nasty colds. And it only gets worse from there. On the flight back home, Simon suffered a medical emergency, which was later determined to be a heart attack, that necessitated CPR, which Brittany herself performed I'm just picturing them on this commercial flight, him having a heart attack, little Brittany Murphy like climbing on top of this big man, her husband, giving him CPR, literally saving his life. I just can only imagine how chaotic and traumatizing that must have been. And between her losing this role, getting fired, you know, walking off, whatever it was, and this incident that happened on the plane, like the tabloids were going crazy. And it was not good crazy. It was all bad.
I just remember feeling so bad for her. And even then, all the tabloids blamed Simon, I remember. Like, nobody liked Simon even before, like, she got really sick. And I think my memory is, like, totally warped on this. But I like to think that people were rooting for Brittany and they just wanted Simon to go away. But at the same time, this was such a misogynistic and body shaming. And
yeah,
women were just constantly being dragged on front pages for how they looked. If they did anything, if someone powdered their nose too much with actual makeup, they were accused of having a drug problem. Like, no young starlet could do anything right in the early 2000s to make it through the media landscape unscathed, it seemed. But this was just like a whole other level. Like, every day something new came out about Brittany Murphy. So we're going to leave this episode there for now. Sorry to leave on such a dark note, but we'll be back next week with a part two where we cover the mystery surrounding Brittany Murphy's death. And we'll talk about some of the theories that have floated around, and we'll just sort of lay it all out on the table, and you can come to whatever conclusion it is that you wish. But we hope that you walk away from today's episode reliving some of your favorite Brittany Murphy movies. Go stream Not Just Married, because we don't want to give Ashton, like, whatever, residuals. Go stream Uptown Girls, Clueless, all the things. We are big Britney fans.
And there is an incredible clip on YouTube I totally forgot to tell you guys about that MTV shared like a year ago. And it's Brittany Murphy showing you her favorite films at Blockbuster. And she's just like laughing and like doing cartwheels in the aisles and like picking up different VHSs. And it's such a nostalgic blast.
Hi, I'm Brittany Murphy, and we're right now at the Blockbuster Video Store, which is pretty busy this time of day. And I'm here to pick out some good videos, my favorite videos. So come on, we'll have fun.
So if you want to remember, like, the Britney that I think of, probably we think of, it's incredible and it's very heartwarming. But thanks for listening. Leave us a review, a kind review, and send any criticisms to our DM. And please rate us 5 stars.
Five stars. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.